Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Highbury Squad. All right, hopping on the train, and happy to say that Matt Spiro is back to join me, and a late addition to the squad, Matt, and I think you'll enjoy this one. Super Kevin Campbell joined us as well.
Yeah, I was on the other end of the train, so I had to come through the carriages.
I hope you stood clear of the closing doors, Super Kev.
No, I had to fight my way through that. Hi, Matt, how are you?
Hi, Kev. Very well. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
All right, so I had to get Matt back on, KC. As you know, we've been talking a lot about the Arsenal. We've had two games where we've been able to kind of see where we're at as a team. Obviously, the additions of Saliba. We talked about him with Matt last time. Gabriel coming in, who I think has done well so far. But the biggest question on everybody's lips, Matt, is, and you're going to teach us because you also taught us how to pronounce Saliba's name correctly. So I'm just going to call in Hussein, and then you can tell us how to pronounce Aor, and maybe I've got it right or wrong. have we got it right or wrong?
Just first, Sophie, I know you're confident with the Hussein, but you mustn't pronounce the H. So it's very much Hussein.
Hussein
Aor.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's funny because I remember. He started playing about four seasons ago for Lyon. He's been playing for Lyon for a while. And I did, even though I've been living in France for 18 years, I had a bit of trouble with his name initially because it is a bit odd, like written like that, three vowels. But yeah, four vowels in a row. But yeah, it's Aor.
Aor. Okay. Well, I hope Aor is an Arsenal player in the next couple of weeks. Kevin had sent me a voicemail question, but I'm just going to kind of let him ask it because I think one of the things that we saw in the West Ham game, Matt, was that we are desperately missing the two players that most Arsenal fans desperately want to sign, right, KC? And I'm probably going to bastardize that a lot as we go here. So Hussein is the one, Kev. So I thought I'd throw it over to you and you can lob your question to Matt.
Yeah, my question about Aor is, do you think he, obviously if we sign him, he's the missing piece that we lack right now, and what do you think he could add to the team, because you've seen him more than we have?
Yeah, look, he can add a lot to the team. Is he the missing piece? You know, he's certainly going to improve us a lot if we sign him. And I think everybody saw, yeah, with the West Ham game on Saturday, when, you know, teams defend in numbers against us and some players are maybe not on their game, it does all look a bit pedestrian, doesn't it, in the midfield. And Aor is a guy who can break through the lines, who can accelerate forward and has a brilliant passing game. So he's a guy who would give us definitely a dimension that we don't have in the midfield. You know, that said, he's 22 years of age. He hasn't yet played international football. In terms of doing it, you know, doing it at the very highest level, away from sort of the comfort zone of his hometown team, he's still got it all to prove. So I couldn't say he'll just step in and be absolutely awesome. But I do, you know, I love him as a player. He can play in a lot of different positions. So if you look at the way that Arteta's team is set up at the moment, he could either play sort of instead of Ceballos alongside Xhaka. He could even play further forward on one of the flanks. He's played on the left quite a bit at Lyon, to quite good effect, but he's always said he wants to play in the middle. The most obvious sort of fit for him would be in a midfield three as one of the guys on the side, so probably to the left of a midfield three, which at the moment we don't have at Arsenal. But yeah, he's a guy who can link the play between sort of, you know, midfield and attack, and I think that's what we need. So yeah, it's exciting. A month ago when the rumours sort of started, first reports, I thought no way Arsenal would get Aor. He was playing the Champions League semi-final. I assumed a Man City or a Juventus would come in for him. That hasn't been the case at the moment. And the longer it goes, you know, Lyon want to sell at least two of their three top players for financial reasons. So, you know, fingers crossed. I hope Arsenal get it done.
Matt, can I just ask you what's his three top traits? What's the three best things about Aor?
Okay, three best things about Aor. It's a tough one. I'd say his two-footedness, which is not quite Cazorla levels, but he is very balanced, very two-footed. His ability to accelerate away from players and to sort of break through the lines, because he's very quick over 5-10 yards. And his passing. I mean, I remember we interviewed him, it wasn't me, but my colleague interviewed him 2 or 3 seasons ago, and he talked a lot about watching Andres Iniesta, how he's his model, you know, finding the angles for those passes. And you can, you know, he's not a carbon copy of Andres Iniesta, but he's that similar style of player, in that he does read the game beautifully, and he seems to be able to pick the angles, weight the passes, and yeah, his passing, I'd say, is his number one attribute.
You got me excited, man. You got me excited here, man. I'm telling you, because this is exactly what we miss.
Yeah.
Yes, it really is. And I think, so Matt, here's the $64 million question, which I know you probably don't have the answer to. I don't think anybody, there's two sides to every story, and then there's the truth. And the president of Lyon has been very vocal, hasn't he, over the last 7 to 10 days, talking about how Arsenal really haven't come in with an offer. Then there were the rumours that he'd already agreed personal terms, and they're haggling over the fee. What is the reality of all of this? Because clearly Arteta has earmarked him. Some fans actually feel like Arteta's earmarked him as a more important signing than Thomas Partey, who we'll get to when we talk about Lacazette in just a second. What's the take on the reality of what's being said by the president of Lyon, what's being said by the French media, and if there is actually any kind of truth to the fact that he has agreed personal terms and they're haggling over a fee right now?
I think the first thing to say is that Jean-Michel Aulas, who's been Lyon's president for 33 years, I think he's an amazing president. If you're a Lyon fan, you love him because he just defends your club at all costs. But you have to take with a big pinch of salt everything he says. He spends more time on Twitter than you, Sophie. He's tweeting all the time. He's attacking articles that are written about Lyon, saying this isn't true, that isn't true. And at the moment, things are not very good for Lyon. They played this Champions League semi-final, but they had their worst league campaign for years. They finished in eighth, and they've started this season badly. And it's not a very good environment at the moment, because they know certain players are leaving. A former Gunner, Jeffrey in Adelaide, has said, "I want out," because he's not been getting picked very much under Rudy Garcia, and he's looked really good when he's played. So there were reports today that Juninho, the sporting director, isn't in agreement with the coach and with Bruno Cheru, who is now the head of recruitment. So, you know, there are problems at Lyon. So Aulas, he has to defend his football club, and he has to make everybody think that he's in total control of everything that's happening. But the French press are very clear. The noise coming out of Lyon is that they are going to sell two of Aouar, Dembele and Depay. It's looking most likely to be Depay and Aouar. And that there's been contact with Arsenal. I mean, there's been contact, whether that's been in the form of an official bid or not. We know that Arsenal approached them with an offer plus of cash plus Guendouzi. I don't think Lyon want Guendouzi. And I'm not convinced Guendouzi would go back to Ligue 1 unless it was to go to Paris Saint-Germain. So I'm not sure that is going to happen, unfortunately. So at the moment, I think it's a bit of a waiting game. And I think a lot's going to happen in general between now and October the 5th. And all French clubs are saying, we know we're not going to have the same squad come October the 6th. So there is this state of transition, and it's difficult.
And, you know, Josh asks a good question in the sense that he hasn't committed, has he, yet internationally? And you mentioned about experience prior and the fact that really the world has superseen him in this last Champions League campaign, and Arsenal really do need someone to be able to come in to make an immediate difference to the team. Guendouzi seems to have more of a higher profile within the international setup. How do you? I don't like to compare players, and especially when they have different attributes and qualities. But KC and Matt, when you look at those two, and everyone was really excited about Guendouzi, clearly his attitude doesn't meet with what Arteta expects, in terms of his Arsenal. Have we devalued Guendouzi, and has it hurt us in being able to maybe make a trade for the two of them? would Leo, can you talk us through that just a little bit?
I think, yeah, of course, players' value goes down a bit if everybody knows that the manager isn't counting on him. And everybody knows that Arsenal are ready to accept offers for Guendouzi. But I think his reputation is quite good. And the fact that Didier Deschamps picked him twice when he had injury problems, and he's had two call-ups to the French national team, which is no mean feat for a French midfielder these days. There are some very good ones not getting a look in. He captained the France under-21s a couple of weeks ago. And he's young, and we've seen he's played a lot more. Certainly in his first season, he played a lot more than we were expecting. He impressed a lot of us in that season. But yeah, there is the sort of the baggage that he's got now, because he had a problem leaving Lorient. He's now got a problem at Arsenal. I don't think he's damaged goods to the extent that good clubs won't come in for him. I think there is recognition he's a good footballer and could be moulded into an important player for another team. So I think Aouar would be rated as a higher, a better footballer in France. I don't think there's much question about that. And he was called up to the last France squad, Aouar, but got COVID-19 just before, so had to pull out. But they're different players, Kev. I mean, you feel, Guendouzi, isn't the missing link insofar as, he doesn't quite have the creativity. He probably covers more ground, is perhaps, a better player defensively than Aouar. But with the ball, Aouar is definitely a better player.
Yeah, I think, look, Guendouzi was bought as a player to come in to develop, but he got thrust into the team early and done okay. He'd done okay when he got in, but he was never the answer. He had some good performances, and he had some performances where he was out of position. Performed okay, but Aouar is a different kettle of fish as far as I'm concerned. At the cutting edge of the pitch, the top end of the pitch, I think that's the important part.
And Kev, sorry, yeah, he's done it. Aouar has done it in the Champions League, which Guendouzi hasn't done yet. The only thing, sort of a caveat that I say with Aouar, 3 years ago when he burst onto the scene, I just, fell in love with him and he looked amazing. And I'm not surprised Arteta wants him, because I remember the performance he turned in when Lyon won at the Etihad a couple of seasons ago. And Aouar was sensational in that game. And Pep Guardiola spoke to him after the game, and that kind of started all the rumours that City were interested. And I'm sure Guardiola and Arteta had conversations about Aouar over the last couple of seasons. So, what I was going to say, the only thing is that 3 years ago, I thought 3 years on, Aouar would be an established French international and would be, and his progression hasn't quite been as easy or as smooth or as rapid as I would have thought. But I wonder as well if that is, the need to kind of test himself in another league at another club, because the ability is there and the environment at Lyon hasn't always been easy for the last couple of years.
That does tend to happen when you have so many big French international players playing all over Europe, and you are at Lyon making a name for yourself. Now that he's made a name for himself in the Champions League, obviously he caught Mikel Arteta's eye in that Lyon win at the Etihad, which, you play against anybody who's good, it's logged. It gets logged in the Rolodex. And then he becomes a manager, and you could imagine the first thing he's probably thinking is, right, I need to get this defence sorted, but I know exactly who I'm going to go for. And it just coincides with Aouar doing so well with Lyon in the Champions League that everybody could see him now, whereas it would have been even better if, and cheaper, if Lyon didn't have the run in the Champions League.
And the deal would have been done by now.
Yeah, and Arteta could go in and say, I'd like to get our, 20 million. Oh, no, we pay 15. Now he's done well in the Champions League. It's 45, 50 million euros. But that's how it works.
Right. Sorry, Sophie. It was against City. Again, he was exceptional. And I kind of thought after that, well, Guardiola's going to go for his man. But, they've got so many players already, haven't they? You know, with Bernardo Silva and Mahrez and Foden and, you know, all of those guys. So it'd be nice if they let us, let us get our.
Here's my biggest fear, you guys. I'm not sure I've seen a transfer window where, and we know how Arsenal fans can melt down very quickly. And I'm not sure I've seen a transfer window where the fan base is so desperate to bring in two players. And a lot of the conversation and some of the questions coming in from everyone is, you know, who would you prefer if we could only sign one? Whether it, the party deal is now maybe contingent on Torreira, and of course rumours are, once again, we say rumours, that so Diego Simeone phoned him personally and, you know, he wants the move. For a while, it looked like he was going to Italy. It looks like a, maybe an exchange loan deal. But I'm going to ask you both this question, especially after watching the West Ham game, where creatively we still are stifled and we could be so much more effective. And we all know Arteta is missing that player. He wants that player desperately. But we also know that we need to kind of protect the defence a lot more. And that player has been missing, as KC says, probably for like 10 years plus. If you could only sign one, which one becomes the most valuable to the team? And I'll start with you, Super Kev.
It's just a difference of opinion. I'll be honest with you, Sophie. I personally think the way the Premier League is set up now, we could do without our, but we will need Partey more. Because when we play against the better teams are the ones who cut through you. And that's where you need that defensive midfield linchpin. We know teams would bank up against us. We know teams would play 4-5 or 5-4 or 5 and they'll play everybody behind the ball at the Emirates to try and get something. But here's the crazy thing. We didn't play well and we still won.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
But can you do that?
Yeah, but we find a way. This is the key. We will find a way to win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a lot different if you've got the creative player, but you haven't got the defensive shield, and we're don't forget West Ham are running through us on the counter attack at the weekend, and that's the thing that we have to stop. I don't care if we're not as creative as we should be. What we got to be is defensively solid first. That for me matters, because you know what? We take the lead, we win the game 1-0. 1-0 to the Arsenal. We'll take that. But if we don't have that defensive shield, we let teams run off us and they come through the middle and then they get round the sides and it's a nightmare for us.
But if you have our, it's 3-0 at half time, Kev. No.
You're right. It could be 3-0 at half time. But again,
maybe
Matt,
not.
No, but Matt, I don't say that can't happen. But it's against the better teams that I really worry about Arsenal, because the other teams are better defensively, but they're better attacking as well. So if you haven't got that defensive shield with the legs in there, Awa won't get the ball, because the better teams keep the ball better. Do you know what I mean?
My answer was going to be definitely Awa if I had to choose, but it's a convincing argument, Kev. And I think you're making... You're making good points, because, you know, we play with Xhaka plus one, you know, usually Ceballos. When Xhaka's not there, we often look like we have no kind of midfield structure at all. So he has got his critics, but positionally he's good. And he is one guy who does sort of cut off counterattacks most of the time when he's not sort of falling asleep. If we were to lose Xhaka, I'd actually be quite worried. If we haven't signed anybody else in the midfield, Elneny has come in and done quite well, but I'm not convinced that, you know, that he's the answer in terms of defensive midfield. So you're right. And in a more attacking sense, you know, Ceballos could play a little bit higher up the pitch. We've brought in Willian. Pepe's not getting in at the moment. So, you know, there are other solutions in terms of trying to be creative and trying to make chances. But you get greedy, don't you, when, you know, get linked with all these players. So I want both of them now. I don't just want Partey.
Well, I want both. Now.
Yeah,
I
think most of us, and I think, you know, mostly the sensible Arsenal fans think that if we do get both of them, then there's no doubt that we could challenge definitely for top four and maybe have bigger ambitions and more lofty ambitions. But also buying these two players comes at a potential cost, doesn't it? Because we don't have the money and we're going to have to make sacrifices. And we've seen that with Emmy and having to sell Emmy and stuff. And one of the worries and concerns is Lacazette. And Amanda sent in a really good question, which I'm going to play to you guys right now. So here we go. Well, I'll play it, but with volume eventually, you guys. Lacazette, does Arteta believe in him? Does he? Is Lacazette going to be the sacrificial lamb here?
Matt, do you want to go?
Me? Yeah, okay. It's a good question. I think so. I think he does. I think, you know, Lacazette had a very poor season, didn't he, by his standards. He got better in the last couple of months after the restart. He was better. But he looked so out of sorts. And it was hard to sort of know why he had that injury. And yeah, he just looked a bit down on life and he was just not putting his chances away. But that said, since Arteta has come in, we've with his games behind closed doors, we've heard him just on at Lacazette the whole time. He's investing a lot of time and energy in moulding Lacazette into the forward he wants him to become. But it's an interesting question as well. Lacazette's interview in L'Équipe a week ago was pretty sort of straight talking. And he was saying, you know, he was asked if his future's at Arsenal. He said, yeah, of course, absolutely no question from my point of view. And he, you know, he said, but what about the club? He says, from my point of view, no question. Two years left. This is, you know, I'm happy here. This is what I want to do. But it kind of, you know, what he didn't say seemed to speak even more. Sort of, you know, he didn't say the club definitely want me. So there seemed to be this sort of doubt that was left. But I, you know, I do think he's committed. I do think he wants to stay. And you know, he started this season well. We know how well he gets on with Aubameyang. So I wouldn't sacrifice Lacazette. I mean, because I just think, what does that mean? You're going, if you're buying midfield, selling Lacazette, you're going in with Nketiah as your one centre forward. I guess Martinelli as well when he comes back. It's a bit risky for me when you've got a guy who is, you know, proven quality. I think you have to keep him.
I think one of the things that we've talked about on the show, Kev and Matt, is that we see Lacazette as our Firmino, perhaps. He's very unselfish. He does so much off the ball that maybe some fans don't appreciate because they can't see it. He opens up opportunities for Oba. He holds the ball up really well. He's a grafter defensively. Kevin, you played up front. What do you see like with Lacazette? Do you sacrifice him in order to bring in the party and the Osim? Do you find a way to keep him? Because I think too, Matt brings up a great point. And something Amanda was talking about in the voice note she left, which I can't play, but I'll ad lib for her, is the importance of the relationship with Xhaka. We mentioned Andy Cole and Dwight York. And
you mean with Aubameyang? Laka and Aubameyang.
Yeah, Laka and Aubameyang. I mean, KC, I think it's super important. We all think, most of us think it's super important.
Yeah, we think it's important, but what we've got to do is put sentiment aside when we actually look at it face value. Does Laka impact the team? Yes, he does. Is there any other forward at Arsenal that can do what Laka does? I don't think there is. Mm-hmm. And until the team start winning on a regular basis, it's great that we've won an FA Cup and then the Community Shield. That's great. But we've got to win consistently. Once we win consistently, Lacazette will get the necessary respect that he deserves. It's only when you win that people start to see the true value of you, because we've been up and down, and that's why people have a, you know, one minute they were in love with Laka, next minute they're not. You know, we know Laka suffered, but the team has been like that. The team haven't been consistent either. So the team need to get consistent, and trust me when I tell you this, Lacazette plays a massive part mm-hmm. in getting us consistent, because his hold-up play and his tenacity at the top end of the pitch makes life a lot easier for Aubameyang, Willian, Pepe, whoever. It makes life a lot easier.
Okay, so we'll move on swiftly. You're listening to the Highbury Squad, sponsored by Playing the Game. Playing the Game creates branded entertainment content. You can go to ptgame.co.uk and check them out. Let's move along swiftly here. We've got another 10 minutes or so with you, Matt, I think. That one question that you can have a swig of your beer. Don't be shy. I'm going to
I did. Sorry. Just I did check with Sophie if I was allowed, if it's not deemed allowed. Unprofessional. So, yeah.
Well, obviously, me getting on the other end of the tube, I missed that memo.
Here's one that we've been stumped about a little bit, and we've been so excited about this player for a year plus now. Why hasn't Saliba started yet, Matt? What's going on there? Is not injured. He played for the under-23s, right? He's not started where we want him to start, and that's at the back, hopefully with Gabriel or David Luiz. What's the scoop?
I haven't got the scoop, Sophie. The scoop is, that Arteta's being really careful with him. And I think that's sensible. I think if he feels that he can, if he feels that he, you know, has the personnel he wants at the moment at the back to be able to do a job, you know, Saliba, you know, I guess the bedding in process, he has had time because he's trained with Arsenal even last season when he was injured. He did his rehab with Arsenal. So I assume he's got himself set up with a house and what have you. He's probably been learning English for the last year. But he's still a young man. He's 19 years of age. I don't think it's a bad thing to sort of bed him in, maybe when there's a bit less pressure. Maybe he'll play against Leicester in the Carabao Cup. Maybe he'll play a bit of Europa League. You know, I that was my argument in the Fulham game. I thought, well, you know, if you've got Gabriel, Holding and Tierney, that's pretty good. But then when I saw Kolasinac starting against West Ham, I thought, you know, maybe Saliba might have been a better bet, even though, you know, wouldn't necessarily have been easy for him to play on the left. And I guess he saw Kolasinac as more of a kind of replacement for Tierney. So, look, I don't know, Sophie. I don't know. I'm a bit disappointed myself. I have a good mate who was picking his fantasy football team, and he said, "Can you just assure me Saliba's going to get game time?" I said, "Definitely, definitely." and he's annoyed with me. So,
note to everyone: do not ask Matt for advice on your fantasy football team. It's kind of been a little bit disappointing, but at the same time, I think, you know, we also have to understand that he's a little bit younger, right, Casey? And in Arteta, we say that we trust, and he knows what he's doing, and. And there's a lot of football that is yet to be played, 4 competitions. And, you know, I think we'll see him eventually. One player that we have seen that I'd love to get your feedback on. And thanks, Danny, for letting us. I thought he had played for the under-23s. Thanks for confirming that. Another player who has, I think, excited everyone in his first 2 appearances, especially his debut. Granted, it was against the weak Fulham, but you can only play who's in front of you. Tottenham were lauded for thrashing Southampton. Southampton don't look great either. Fulham look like the team that's going to go down. KC, Gabriel, obviously Matt saw him play a lot in Liga. What's your assessment so far?
Well, Matt had a really good assessment of Gabriel when we first spoke to him. And, you know, made me really take a closer look at Gabriel. I like what I see. I've got to say that. Obviously, playing the centre and sometimes on the left of a 4 or the centre of a 5, it's...
Sorry, Casey, I had to put that up.
First time I became a scorer. Never mind. Shit happens. I think Gabriel is looked pretty comfortable to me, and we could see his physicality when he's playing as well. He's big, strong, quick across the ground. You know, doesn't seem to be overawed by playing in the Premier League and playing against Mikel Antonio. You know, Mikel Antonio could give a lot of experienced defenders fits, but he handled him pretty well whenever he had to engage him. I like what I see. I really do. It's just, I don't think this is the finished article of Gabriel, but I don't think this is the finished article of the Arsenal back 4 or 5 yet, because I think David Luiz is going to go in there. So then Gabriel will probably play as the left side centre half of a 3.
Yeah.
And you know, there might be Saliba might play at some stage. I think Arteta's doing great. He's keeping him in reserve and he's going to unleash him because So I think Saliba will be a bit frustrated. He wants to play in the first team. So I think he's just keeping him, feeding him that raw meat. And then when he gets his chance, he's gonna eat him. He's gonna get it.
Matt, what's your assessment of Gabriel?
Yeah, really good against Fulham. Really impressed, particularly after that slight misunderstanding at the beginning where Fulham had that chance. But he seems to be really calm. He's got that presence. I thought against West Ham, I think it's hard as well. You know, what Kevin said, we don't have our main guys there. So he's playing with Kolasinac to his left and Holding to his right. I thought they're all a bit shaky. I thought Holding as well didn't have his best game against West Ham. It was a harder game, I think, for the defenders than the Fulham game. And they probably didn't get the midfield protection they wanted. And there were a few crosses that Gabriel struggled a little bit, but that's totally understandable. I think what Kev said is right. It's definitely not the finished product that we're seeing at the moment. But I thought his passing was a bit more expansive. We saw his ability to play the ball into the midfield, play sort of quite low, longish, accurate passes. And I think that's going to be a plus. And I agree. I think he'll be playing to the left of David Luiz pretty soon. But given that he had to just slot in like that away from home, albeit against a fairly weak Fulham side, but away from home, and he was, you know, the central man, he did really, really well. So it's been, good start from him, definitely.
Yeah, and also, you know, getting that goal, helps him settle in a little bit. The way the players reacted to him as well, you get a sense that he's been embraced really quickly, sounds like a really good guy. And your assessment a month ago, Matt, was spot on. So well done. We won't ask you for fantasy football tips, but we will definitely ask you for scouting tips. Matt, what else do you want us to know before Casey and I are going to stay on for an extra a few minutes after we let Matt go? Matt just got in from work. He's trying to sip his beer. He's very kindly joined us to talk a little bit about Lacazette, Saliba, Gabriel and Osimhen. What would you like us to know? What haven't we talked about any of these players? Or are there anything else that you're seeing on the horizon for Arsenal in relation to any Liga imports or anything? What is it you want to leave here with everyone knowing?
I don't think so. I was just going to say, if ever we do sign Aouar and you don't think he plays like Iniesta, don't blame me about that, okay? Because you know, a couple of years ago he said he wanted to model himself on Iniesta. But, a guy we haven't talked about is Runarsson, the Icelandic keeper who joining, by all accounts, from Dijon.
Oh, signed. Signed. It's done.
That's all done, yeah. Okay, yeah, so an interesting one. I think our goalkeeping coach knows him well because he worked with him in Norway. I don't have a huge amount of positive say because the season he played in Dijon, he struggled quite a lot. Dijon had an awful defence. And then he lost his place in the team. So I've talked about him in the last few days, saying that I don't, you know, it's a surprising one, to be honest with you. But he's a 25-year-old. He's played international football with Iceland. He's more of a modern goalkeeper who's quite good with his feet. And if the goalkeeping coach knows him well, maybe he will turn out to be a good signing.
How old is he?
25, honest, I believe.
I don't know much about him. I'm not going to sit here and act like I've seen him play a ton. I really don't know much about him. I almost think that a lot of the positions that most fans don't know about are goalkeepers. Pramod asked a really good question. Did we make a mistake letting Emi go? I don't think it's a mistake to make, what, 25 million from a backup goalkeeper who probably wasn't going to play unless Leno was injured. So Emi had so many great qualities that we all kind of fell in love with in that latter part of the season. And of course, in our FA Cup win, I don't think it's a mistake. I think you guys agree with me that it wasn't a mistake, but I don't know anything about this new goalkeeper. So you sound surprised. You say you're surprised. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because have you rated him?
No, I'm not, I'm surprised because he's a guy who didn't do very well. So it's a negative surprise, but you know, it doesn't mean it's going to be an awful signing. This was two seasons ago. He came to Dijon, was the first choice goalkeeper. Like I said, they had an awful defense. They conceded a lot of goals. He didn't command his defense in the way that Dijon had been hoping. He's not a big goalkeeper. He's not as big or commanding as Emi Martinez. I think he's 6'1". And he ended up losing his place. And they brought Alfred Gomis, who was 6'5", Senegalese goalkeeper, who did much better and won his place in the side. And the interview I saw with Runarsson back in March was saying that he was looking to go because he didn't want to be number two, which makes me wonder why he's joined Arsenal, because I don't think he's going to be number one.
So, you know, come on, Matt. When Arsenal ask you, you're coming to be number two. I'll come to be number two at Arsenal.
I feel like I've just put a whole downer on this whole podcast. But no, Runarsson, he may well develop into a top keeper. Sophie, I'll just say, in Ligue 1 at the moment, and I know I'm always advertising Ligue 1, but there have been so many, there's been a lot of COVID-19, there's been a lot of injuries, we've had loads of matches, and all that has meant that the coaches have been blooding a lot of young players. There are so many good young players at the moment in so many of these clubs. I commentated Saint-Étienne when they won at Marseille on Thursday, and they just had these sort of 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds I've never seen before. And there's a left back called Yvan Masson for Saint-Étienne. He was playing sixth tier last year. I think he's 19 or 20. And he, in the last two games, just looked brilliant. And that's what I like about Ligue 1. But even more so at the moment, there are so many kids. Obviously, Camavinga at Rennes, we've got to keep our eyes on him. Rennes joint top, 17-year-old running matches. So, you know, I can't say Arsenal are in for any of these guys, but they should definitely be keeping their eyes on Liga.
And thanks to Danny for his stats. He's always great at his stats. Love Danny from A Bergkamp Wonderland, another great Arsenal podcast that you guys should check out. And what better way to leave you than with a little gag from one of our mates over at A Bergkamp Wonderland, Josh. Question is, Matt, did he cut the mustard at Dijon? Very nice.
No, he didn't. And yeah, 2 million is risk-free. But if Leno gets an injury and we're suddenly, you know, we're counting on Runarsson, and then it suddenly gets risky. But there you go. I'm being negative again.
Time to go enjoy your beer and relax after a hard day's work. We want to thank you for jumping on with us. And, you know, we might be calling on you in the next 10 days to see how this all shakes out.
Hopefully.
But thanks again for your wisdom.
Cheers, mate.
Pleasure, Sophie. Cheers, Kev. Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye, mate.
Bye. Take care.
Super Kev.
Yes, my dear.
Here we are.
Well, do you know what? I love speaking to Matt because he has such a nice way about explaining the French side of things and what he sees out there. Really, really good guy to get on. I'm sure the people watching and listening enjoy him.
Yeah. Okay, so let's you got another 10 minutes, quick 10 minutes for me right here, Super Kev?
Me?
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah.
All right, let's go. So we spoke and we had our live show after the West Ham match. I think we all agree it wasn't the best, but like you said, we scraped through. You mentioned mm-hmm. something earlier on in the podcast and I wanted to come back to it because this scraping through, I don't think is a plan, right? We've done that for so many years and we won't be able to scrape through against maybe a Liverpool or a City. But one thing that we did see this weekend, which I think was enlightening, is Chelsea and Manchester United and their results. And I remember I was listening to, I think it was Andy and Jason on TalkSport, and they lambasted an Arsenal fan who had called in to say, you know what, I think we could finish maybe third or fourth. And these Chelsea and Manchester United fans have been taking the piss out of us for so many years. And there was a lot of satisfaction in seeing them both suffer this weekend. Let's just say things stay exactly as they are, which we know they won't, but you know I love playing the what if game. If they do stay exactly as they are we a better side than them because of Arteta, or are we a better side than them because we've got better players?
No, it comes down to your manager. You've got to look where we were last season. And then you look at progress. So if it finished and we were in the positions where we are and they are where they are, then obviously we're a better team because we've got a better manager. The manager's done a better job mm-hmm. with players. So we don't go. You don't ever go player for player, do you? Because the game's not played on paper. Although we do try and do that from time to time. But let's be honest. Arsenal are on an ascent. They're going up. They're ascending. Now, we need that with consistency, Sophie. That's what we need. We need that with consistency. Now, scraping through is not a bad trait to have, let me tell you, when you don't play well. If you can get across the line a few times when you don't play well, because that habit of winning is infectious. That's what we need to do. But look, player for player, we don't play. I don't play that game. If we finish in that those positions and they don't, it's because Arteta is developing this team and we're a better team than them.
And I think it's so evident because there's been so much talk of these ex-players coming back to manage these sides, Kev. And, you know, Lampard failed to bring Derby up. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer failed at the highest level, got Cardiff relegated. Obviously, both uber legends at their clubs. Arteta was a beloved player at our club. I wouldn't call him a legend.
Captain. It was captain as well. Captain.
But I think the word legend is used very loosely these days. I think he was a lovely player who was always respectful, played beautiful football, but I wouldn't call him a legend.
Yeah, wasn't a legend, a legend.
He has the opportunity to become a legend, you know, by driving us to, you know, our next chapter in our story. So I think that I think Lampard gets a pass. I really do think that the media is so lenient on him because maybe it's because he's English. I think Solskjaer has had definitely a harder time. But when you have like Pogba in your team and Greenwood and you have Rashford and you have Fernandes, and then look at what Chelsea did. I know they played Liverpool, but they weren't even great in their first game. And then you see kind of what Arteta's done. He's made, I like to say, lemonade out of some lemons, especially at the back. You ask yourself, with those two additional players and him actually building this team under his image in what he wants, because every great team is an image of their manager, I think Arsenal fans should be less worried than United and Chelsea fans right now.
Agree? I agree. I totally agree. But what we must understand is they've been the darlings. Both of them clubs have been the darlings of the media. Mm-hmm. So it takes time to become a darling of the media. In fact, do you know what, Sophie? I don't want to be a darling of the media.
I don't either.
I want the media to kick and scratch and hate us. That's what I want. I want that. So I could go, get out. Every time we win, I want to see them uneasy, you know, the articles come out and the media stuff come out, and I want them to talk down about us, because you know what that does? That brings our fan base and club together. That's what I want, you know, that us against them mentality. It's so powerful, and we had that for years and years and years. We don't want to be media darlings. Let that be them. They can be the media darlings.
I like that. I do like this. And I think Arteta has that a little bit from Pep, doesn't he? Because as good as Barcelona were, as good as Bayern were, as good as City were, every great manager finds an edge to put a chip on their players' shoulders. You lived and breathed it with George Graham. Mm-hmm. Put those double chips on your shoulders, carry those bricks, and we're off to the races. And I think that adds a completely different vibe. But here's my biggest concern, Kev. If we don't sign either Osimhen or Thomas, I fear there's going to be this mental breakdown again in the fan base. I just think it's going to be a bit unhealthy, and I think it's going to be fortunate that fans aren't going to be in the stadium, because I think that adds a whole other level of stress and pressure. I think Arsenal are one of the teams that has benefited the most out of no fans. I think you can hear Arteta's voice on the sideline. The dude is like directing a movie like Stanley Kubrick. I mean, it's just beautiful to listen to and watch. Do you think there's going to be a meltdown if we don't get either one of these players?
Well, of course, there's going to be meltdown. There's going to be disappointment, etc. But I don't think that's the case. I don't think Mikel Arteta and Edu and the guys are thinking about not signing these players. Now, if we don't sign these players, of course, there's going to be a bit of a meltdown, because, you know, we're a big club. We want to be making moves, and these are key pieces, cornerstone pieces, if you like. whether we like it or not, Sophie, it all comes down to results. If the results go our way, then people could not happy, but they will go with it, kind of thing. But I don't think what I've seen, how Arteta and Edu want to move, that they're even remotely thinking of not strengthening, because they know we need to strengthen and they know the positions we need to strengthen. Look, Mikel Arteta has been beside Pep at Manchester City, and you've seen them, the way they strengthen that team. You can't go at it half-hearted. You've got to do it properly. Right. And that's what I think he wants to. That's why we're being linked with these players in the key positions. So it's just a matter of us getting it done. Whether it's, you know, Torreira as part of a swap with Partey and cash. However we want to weave it, whoever we want to sell, there's permutation. They've got to make it happen.
Yeah. Okay, a few more minutes here with Super Kevin Campbell and the Highbury squad. This show is sponsored by Playing the Game, ptgame.co.uk. They create branded entertainment. You could go check them out. Super Kev, this has been coming up for the last couple of days since Jose Mourinho has been bullying Dele. I think this is a very different conversation than Sol Campbell, people. So calm your jets. But I have to throw it out there, because a lot of people have been asking us in the over the last couple of days. This is a big fat no, right? I mean, who, why, what is this? Let's take Dele. What is this about?
Listen, I'm not even entertaining none of that nonsense.
Yes.
It's nonsense to me.
Erase it.
Erase it.
Do you think Archie talks about the pressure? I mean, Gareth Bale, I have a lot of Tottenham family supporters, unfortunately. A lot of my cousins, my own brother supports Tottenham. It's so weird. My dad's a Man United fan. My sister's a Man United fan. My brother's a Tottenham fan, and I'm a Gooner. I listened well, Casey, to my other
cousin. Your uncle. Red Star. Your uncle.
So are we, all of a sudden they signed Bale and we're supposed to be worried? What is that about?
What's the worry? There's nothing to worry about. It's still Spurs, isn't it? No.
But it's also Spurs under Mourinho. And because they thrashed Southampton, now we're supposed to be worried. I think everyone's forgetting how rubbish they were in the Europa League the other night. And of course, Kane and Son, they're good players. But
look what they played against Everton. What happened?
Exactly. Exactly.
And wow. Everton should have won 2 or 3. So I don't buy it. I don't buy into Mourinho. I don't buy into Spurs. I'd rather talk about the weather.
Okay, so that said, I think Colorado Gooner brings up a great point. I think this season's going to be nuts. I think this season, Liverpool are going to be great. I mean, goddamn Thiago coming on, having more passes in 45 minutes than any Chelsea player in the entire game, Kevin. Your former team, Everton, that you banged in a ton of goals for, look fluid. They look... their brand, Decore, for me, I mentioned it to you the other day. I think he could end up being one of the signings of the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's unbelievable how, and I think that's what Arsenal fans see. I think they see like what Everton have done with their midfield and how it's completely transformed them as an entire team. It's the nucleus of everything good that's happening right now. It's
Sophie, when you consider. I made the analogy about a Cortina, clapped out Cortina engine, and now they've put in a Rolls Royce engine. And going behind to a West Brom team who ain't bad. I'm telling you, this West Brom team ain't bad. They went behind, and normally Everton, it could have gone pear-shaped. But what happened? They click into gear, and next minute they take the game away from West Brom Jabbing and score 5 goals. Dominic Calvert-Lewin gets a hat-trick. You see Rodriguez, James, fantastic feat, Alan and Decore, they're making a massive difference. They're up in the level. We don't have that yet.
Right.
We don't, and that's what we need. We need to be able to up the level.
Right.
Because they've got a better midfield. If we're honest, if you look at their midfield and you look at our midfield, they've got a better midfield than us.
They do right now.
Right now. But like I'm saying, Mikel Arteta, he's a midfield general. He's played in the midfield. He knows, Sophie. He knows what he needs. I'm telling you, and he's not gonna stop until he gets it.
This is why it's so important. All right, I'm going to leave you on this question because another one that's doing the rounds right now. And to be honest with you, I get it, and at the same time, I don't. This idea of building a statue outside the Emirates for your boy, Ian, right. And I'm not a fan of statues, I've got to say. I mean, I think, you know, it's actually now in this world, in the world we live in, has become kind of a mixed emotion of what statues represent. And I think players are revered. I think, you know, obviously we all know and love Ian Wright. He's a total legend. But I actually think if you're going to build a statue outside the Emirates, it should be of Maria, our super fan, who's been going since she was like minus 2 years old. Every academy game, every women's game, every first team game, home
youth
and away.
Team, youth team.
I mean, can we just stop with the statues? What do you think, Casey? I love Wrighty, but no to the statue for me.
Well, I love Wrighty, and listen, Ian Wright breaking Bastien's record, 179 goals he got or whatever.
I was there that day.
Yeah, you're there. I mean, you know, that is a feat, a massive feat at a club like Arsenal. So, yeah, I get that. Thierry Henry, you know, has got a statue. Tony Adams has got a statue. But for me, is where do you stop? I think that's where you're saying, yes. You know, where do you stop?
Right.
The fact that Ian Wright doesn't have a statue, I would think, I wouldn't think of Ian Wright, because I love Wright, obviously, he's a brother to me. I'd think of Arsene Wenger getting a statue.
Or George Graham.
Or George Graham getting a statue. You know, somebody like that.
What
somebody.
What about Mickey?
Yeah, you know, so, again, don't know where to stop. Where do you stop with the statues? Or maybe they do something a little bit different and have the bus of the players.
Uh-huh.
So you can fit a lot more there. A bust of Ian Wright, a bust of Michael Tony, Rocky.
That.
Why not have a statue of Rocky?
Right.
I think that would be fitting for a lot of Arsenal fans.
Dennis. I mean, like, where do we stop? Vieira, where do we stop?
Exactly. It's difficult one to gauge. If they did do a statue of Wright, listen, I'm not arguing with it because Wright is a fantastic, not only is a fantastic guy, he's a fantastic player who broke records and is still a fantastic gooner. I get all that. But there was people before Wrighty, mm-hmm. and there was people after Wrighty who could get a statue as well. So it's a difficult one to gauge.
Yeah. Now I'm with you. Listen, here's the beauty about what we just talked about for the last 2 minutes. This club has developed so many legends over the years, and they've all brought value to the club in so many different ways. Obviously, Wrighty getting that goal scoring record and keeping it until Thierry came along was a massive, massive achievement. But we've got so many. The managers, in my opinion, like George Graham and Arsene Wenger, changed things so much. You know, George bringing down Goliath, Arsene Wenger changing the game completely. It kind of annoys me when people talk about Pep Guardiola being the game changer of the Premier League. I think he evolved it completely, yes, but he did it from the Arsene Wenger playbook. And just read Sir Alex Ferguson's quotes about his opinion on what he felt Arsene Wenger did. Forget the latter years, what Arsene did for the club was incredible. So we're saying no to the statue. I think we should stop that GoFundMe link. Even PG forwarded it today. I'm like, no, I'm not signing it.
Yeah, but she's going on loan, so don't worry too much about it.
Yes, and you know, we're trying to make that loan deal happen. I think if we could get another, we've got the Burkamp Wonderland guys in tonight. Maybe Gunners podcast have walked away from the deal. Guns and Yellow Ribbons have walked away from it too. Casey, it's looking like we've got a super Ozil situation happening.
You know why? You know why they've walked away? We gave them permission to speak to her, and that was enough. We gave them permission, and she's duffed the deal in, ain't she? So next time, nobody gets to speak to her.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely brilliant. Well, listen, that's all we've got time for today. We will be back with another live show on Wednesday. Our guest will be Jordan Jarrett Bryant from Channel 4. He's also a mega Arsenal fan. He's got some great perspectives on the game. And you won't want to miss Friday's show because we have Liverpool legend Stevie Nicol joining us, who is going to preview the big match on Monday. Ah, if we can do them again, Super Kev.
At their place. Oh, yeah. That will set the Premier League on fire.
Yeah, it will. And it will set Arsenal fan base on fire, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Until Wednesday, you guys, we will see you. And in the absence of PG, I'm going to leave it to you, Casey.
It's always Arsenal, everyone.
Don't you forget it.